WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You have made it. That is right. It is now the end of the work week, Friday, TGIF. It is September 18th, and you now are now locked into Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, and we have a fantastic show in store for you all. Just in case you missed last night's Current Sports TV sit-down with D.A. Jones, who is the head coach of the Kappa Express youth football team, it was a fantastic one. But, you know, each and every week here on the show, in case you miss it, we always play the audio of that interview right here on the show, so you don't want to miss any of that. We'll also give you a preview of the Michigan State and Air Force college football game. That kickoff will occur around noon tomorrow, so we'll give you a preview, you know, and things to look for in that game. Also, the Lions and Vikings will also preview that matchup. We'll have Reflection Friday for you. We'll do our NFL pick'em, which we forgot to do last week, and so much more. We'll take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. like we always do. You know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, but hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners, again, for this Friday, September 18th. Michigan State University inducted six members into its Athletics Hall of Fame yesterday as a part of the Celebrate 2015 weekend. The class of 2015 included Charlie Bell, Mary Kay Itinari, Pat Milkovich, Andre Risen, Doug Weaver, and Mike York. The Celebrate 2015 weekend included the sixth annual Varsity Letter Jacket presentation and Hall of Fame induction ceremony yesterday, a banquet to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Varsity S Club today, and culminates tomorrow with a special recognition of the Hall of Famers during the Michigan State Air Force football game at Spartan Stadium, again at noon. Michigan State has eliminated the Blue Lines at Mud Ice Arena. How cool is this story, right? Now, at the request of Athletic Director Mark Hollis, they were painted green when the ice was reinstalled recently in the hockey rink. Now, he said he didn't think it would be an issue with the NCAA, and he was comfortable with the decision. Why did he want to paint the lines green? Well, do we really need to spell that out? He went on to say, quote, "It's about the heritage and the color of the school without taking any of the integrity of the game away. It just gives a unique story to a program that is very proud of its heritage, its logo, its color, and gives us something that is kind of unique." Gotta love that. Great idea, Mark Hollis. When doesn't the man have a good idea, though, right? All right, the New England Patriots acquired wide receiver Keyshawn Martin. Of course, Keyshawn formerly played right here at Michigan State from the Houston Texans yesterday for an undisclosed draft pick. Now, the 25-year-old Martin was in uniform but didn't play in the Texas season opening loss to Kansas City on Sunday in 48 NFL games. With Texas, after being drafted 121st overall out of Michigan State in 2012, he had 38 receptions for 416 yards and three touchdowns. He returned 68 kicks for 1,700 yards and returned 86 punts for 766 yards, including an 87-yard TD return back in 2013. Martin is an Inkster native, shout out to Inktown, who played high school at Wesleyan John Glenn. Bill Laimbeer, who went from being fired last fall to leading the New York Liberty to the best record in the WNBA for the first time in franchise history, he was named as the WNBA's Coach of the Year. How about that? Laimbeer won the award for the second time in his career, also winning, if you remember, back in 2003 when he was coaching the Detroit Shock. He is the fourth coach to win the award at least twice. The first day of the Detroit Red Wings training camp started a bit violently. A few minutes after the group had begun drills at Center Ice Arena in Traverse City, veteran Darren Helm and free agent forward Jerome Verrier collided leaving both on the ice. Now, Helm was able to get up on his own and skate off, though he was held off the ice as the rest of his group continued practice. Verrier was taken off on a stretcher, but he was moving his hands. We'll certainly have an update on that one if we do get one throughout this hour. The Denver Broncos somehow, someway, were able to come back and defeat the Kansas City Chiefs. What a game it was last night. Again, the Broncos going on to win that one 31-24 on the road in Arrowhead Stadium. Denver cornerback Bradley Roby scooped up the ball and raced 21 yards to the end zone for the game-winning touchdown to cap a frenetic fourth quarter. The Chiefs have now lost seven consecutive games to Denver, the last win coming in 2011 against Tim Tebow. Manning improved his career record to 14-1 against Kansas City now. And number 11 Clemson got its first real test of the year last night, traveling to play Louisville. The Tigers ended up winning 20-17, but it wasn't easy. Despite a mostly dominant defensive effort, Dabo Swinney's team needed a missed 38-yard field goal by the Cardinals' Greg Hugel with under 3 minutes left and an interception in the end zone on the game's final play to avoid an upset, at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that happens to be on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air, or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show. To WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and my heart rate is still trying to recover from last night's Denver Broncos and Kansas City Chiefs game. What you just heard was audio from, of course, Jim Nance, who was the play-by-play man, the man behind the mic calling last night's action at Arrowhead as Peyton Manning. You know, and it's so crazy because, you know, we live in a world and in a culture, and naturally, with us being on sports talk radio, where for 5 hours throughout the week, we have to break down and analyze what happens in the sporting world, you know, overreactions naturally happen. And after seeing Peyton Manning and those Denver Broncos struggle, even though they did win against the Baltimore Ravens last week, one of the prime storylines you heard to begin this week was whether or not Peyton Manning still had it. That was the big question, you know, and I tuned in to ESPN and Fox Sports and different shows throughout you know, national syndicated programs, and everyone was seeming to just be harping on how Peyton doesn't have it anymore. how he is, you know, his arm isn't like what it used to be. His accuracy isn't there. His knack for the game isn't there. You know, how he took so many hits last week and how his body is breaking down now. But I tell you what, Peyton Manning is still Peyton Manning. And there is, you know, a lot of truth to those statements because, again, folks, Peyton Manning isn't getting older. And I truly think that maybe after this year, Peyton Manning is going to call it a career. He's up there. He's won a Super Bowl. He has been, you know, regarded as the best quarterback in the league for quite some time now. Again, you know, you can go back and forth with Brady as of recently. But, you know, especially when Manning did win that Super Bowl, I mean, it was no question that he was the best in the game. And he will go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever pick up a football. But at the same time, folks, looking at what Peyton Manning was able to do last night, the man still has some greatness left in that tank, without a doubt. He went 26 of 45 for 256 yards, 3 touchdowns, and just 1 pretty bad interception. But he was able to shake that off and just had a remarkable game after that, I thought, and especially in that fourth quarter when his team was down a touchdown. And he really, you know, when they needed to tie the game, Peyton Manning just sat up in the shotgun and was able to pick apart that Kansas City Chiefs defense play after play after play. And you also got to give a lot of credit to that Denver Broncos, Wade Phillips. Shout out to the former Cowboys coordinator, Wade Phillips, who is now the defensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. Wade Phillips in that defense was fantastic last night because they were able to keep Denver in that game, especially early on when Peyton Manning did throw that interception that put Kansas City up by 2 touchdowns, when all seemed to be bleak and dim. And you even saw the persona of the Broncos on the sideline. You saw Peyton Manning, you know, he was constantly shaking his head and having his head down at the grass. You kind of felt as though this was going to get out of hand and this was going to be a blowout. But that Denver Broncos defense was able to force turnovers and give Peyton Manning and the offense a chance to salvage some sort of momentum and to keep them in the game. And that's exactly what happened last night. Fun to watch, though. And now, you know, you look at, you know, Kansas City, a team that is certainly very, very good this year. Alex Smith, you know, who I think is a fantastic quarterback. You look at the rushing attack, you know, and Jamaal Charles, I think, is so underrated. He had a great game last night. But at the end of the day, we all know what can really turn around a football game. Those being giving up, 1, big plays, and 2, turnovers. You got to take care of the football, and that's something that Kansas City just did not do last night. Jamaal Charles, he had 2 fumbles. He lost both. DeAnthony Thomas, he also had a fumble. It was just a bad game for Kansas City when it comes to managing the game and taking care of the football, and the Denver Broncos were absolutely able to take advantage of that. And, you know, you talk about turnovers. You know, I mentioned in our headliners the one that really sealed the deal. And it's so funny because you look at Peyton Manning, who had led his team down the field. They score a touchdown. They tie things up with literally, you know, like seconds left to go in the game. And Peyton Manning, he's on the sidelines looking at, you know, pictures of the Kansas City defense throughout the entire game, you know, trying to get prepared for this thing to go into overtime. And then, you know, Bradley Roby, he scoops up the ball, races 21 yards to the end zone for that game-winning touchdown. The defense has now come up big, not once but twice, to start this year to seal the deal for a Denver Broncos win. They now are 2-0. And you looked at Peyton Manning's face, and he cracked the biggest smile that I've ever really seen, you know, Peyton crack, other than winning the Super Bowl, to be honest. And I, you know, looking at the interview with Tracy Wolfson after the game, I've never seen Peyton Manning that elated after a game, you know, in just week 2 of the NFL regular season. So he knew that he did not have a great game to start, but he knows that his team is very fortunate right now to be sitting at 2-0. But don't doubt Peyton Manning's greatness, folks. When he is able to get good protection from that offensive line, sit in the shotgun, and look at, you know, his available options, Peyton Manning can compete with the best of them still, folks. So I think it's a bit premature to be pulling the gun and saying that Peyton Manning still doesn't have it. Just had to get that off of my chest. Again, folks, you can call in and get anything off your sports noggin or sports chest by calling 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Right now, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports, my man 50 Grand, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Doing well, Al. So, let me get your take on this, because I'm in a fantasy league for money, the one league that is for money. I've got the other that isn't. I'm doing great in that. The one that is for money, I'm not doing so great, of course. So anyway, though.
That's how it goes. Yeah.
It always is, yeah. So anyway, my opponent has Jamaal Charles and Demetrius Thomas. So he had a pretty good game last night. He had a nice showing against me. He's up 30 points. But this league does not take off points for fumbles.
I was just about to say that, because even if he did have Jamaal Charles, because Jamaal Charles certainly had a great game last night. He ran for 125 yards and a touchdown. But in the leagues I play in, if my quarterback throws an interception, or if my running back happens to fumble, yeah, I'm getting negative points for that. I get points taken off. So I think you need to talk to your commish, my man, because that's pretty bad, dude. And actually, looking at when Peyton Manning threw, because I have Peyton Manning in one of my leagues, and when Peyton Manning threw that interception that led to the Denver Broncos being down two touchdowns, I had at one point -1 against my opponent. And then I have, because this is in my fraternity league, so I didn't have my frat brother, texting me and talking so much trash. I mean, if I could show you the thread throughout that game, dude, and the ride of emotions, he went from, oh yeah, look at -1, blah, 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 to where it ended up at the end of the day. Peyton Manning ended up getting me 20 points last night. But yeah, if you do have negative plays, though, you're punished for that in my league. So I think that's something you need to, you certainly need to hold a press conference and talk to your commission about that, dude.
Yeah, to use a word that I've been trying to incorporate more recently into my vocabulary, that's rubbish. Love that word, rubbish.
It is a great word.
I wish I could use a British accent with it, but
yeah,
it is a great word.
No,
so,
definitely, though.
No, but how does that make sense? You should be penalized for your negative plays and rewarded for your positive plays. But no, a fumble is equally as costly as we saw last night. Sometimes that's as big as a touchdown. Sometimes it's bigger. In that case, it was even bigger, and that's not even negative points. That makes no sense. That's my rant for the day.
None at all. I love it, Isaac. All right, well, we always love to start our show with a few rants and to get things off our chest. You know what? I first off want to, before I get to this story, because we haven't talked about this story yet, and I want to get to Rutgers and their head coach Kyle Flood, who is suspended right now. I'm gonna get to that in just a sec, but I also would be remiss if I didn't send out a congratulations to the class of 2015 who were inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame last night. Of course, including Charlie Bell, Mary Kay Itinerary, Pat Milkovich, Andre Risen, Doug Weaver, and Mike York, all fantastic athletes who had their names etched in stone in Michigan State athletic lore. So congrats to all of them, and especially a guy like Andre Risen, who I think it is so overdue that his name is finally getting inducted into the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame. And I don't know if you guys have seen or have been keeping up with his son, Hunter Risen, who plays for Ann Arbor, Skyline. And Andre is actually an assistant coach for that high school football team, along with his son, which they have a ton of firepower for that school. And I think they are really going to compete for a state championship and possibly even win one this season. But Hunter is sort of following in the footsteps of his father, playing wide receiver out in Ann Arbor, and he is one fantastic player, and he looks just like his pop. So, but congratulations to that entire class. We hope to have Andre on Current Sports TV very, very soon. It's also in the works. So, definitely wanted to shout that out as well. But you know what? This is one of those stories where, that has so many different layers of conversation involved into it, because when it comes to the world of coaching and Division I athletics, there's so much pressure that comes with it, because, if you don't perform, if you don't get W's, you better believe that you're not going to keep your job for long. And we see certain stories in the world of college athletics in general, not even just talking about college football or basketball here, but just in general, the pressure to win is so great that we see coaches and players go to extremes in order to make sure that they get W's on a Saturday afternoon, or a Saturday evening. And Rutgers football coach Kyle Flood is certainly in hot water right now, because he has been suspended 3 games and fined $50,000 for violating university policy about contacting faculty about a player's academic status. Now, I don't know what in the world was going through Kyle Flood's head, because if you look at the timeline of events and exactly what took place, you just sit back and say, Mr. Flood, are you okay? Are you feeling okay, dude? Because this situation was just so blatant in your face that I don't know how in the world Kyle Flood thought he was going to get away with this. Now, this is exactly what happened. University President Robert Barchi said that Floyd circumvented established policies and procedures by emailing a faculty member and later scheduling an in-person meeting to discuss the academic standing of former cornerback Nadir Barnell. Now, after emailing the faculty member from his personal email account, Flood was told by a member of Rutgers' academic advising staff not to contact professors about student-athletes, but he still went ahead with the in-person meeting, according to the investigative report. Floyd and Barnell both admitted that Flood also made minor changes to a paper that Barnell submitted to a professor who had agreed to review it as, quote, partial satisfaction for the requirements of a course the student had already completed. And again, it goes on and on. I could go on and on about this story, but even just stopping there, I mean, when looking at what Kyle Flood did, I mean, how in the world did he expect not to get caught? I mean, now I understand there's a lot of immense pressure on a coach who coaches, especially Division I college football. There's a lot of pressure on any coach to succeed because at the end of the day, like I said, if you don't get W's, that leash becomes shorter and shorter and shorter, and eventually you are on the hot seat. Now, for Kyle Flood, there are, like I said, there are certain lines that you just don't cross. And anytime you go out your way to make sure that a preeminent player for your program stays eligible and you try to alter their academic standing based on the hardcore proof that that individual may not be getting it done in the classroom to begin with, and you go out of your way to sort of blur those lines and contact the professor directly, and then going more in depth to the meeting that happened, an in-person meeting. So Kyle Flood, he goes from his personal email account, he says to the professor, hey, we need to talk about this in person. He goes incognito. I believe they met in front of like the library and in front of where everyone can see him. He goes and tells the professor, I didn't wear, Rutgers, apparel because I didn't want any attention to be attracted. I didn't want anyone to know that I'm out here because clearly you're violating a rule, Kyle. So, he talks to the professor. They talk. He makes changes to a paper. All of this done to make sure that one of his student, quote unquote, athletes are able to play on Saturdays. I just thought it's absolutely ridiculous. And I really thought that, man, I tell you what, Kyle Flood is lucky that he just got suspended 3 games because this could have been much, much worse. Isaac, what was your reaction to this whole fiasco when you read about this?
Yeah, it sure seems like a scheme or a scandal of a movie with a meeting in front of the library.
It's, right.
No, like you said, this is something which I'm not sure how he thought he could get away with this, what was going through his head. But when you're a student athlete, you do have certain responsibilities because at the end of the day, whether you think you should get paid or not, you still have a responsibility based on the scholarship and the contract you signed to maintain a certain GPA. And there are plenty of resources available to those students to help keep up that GPA. And no, Flood really hadn't gotten involved. I'm sure that maybe the player misses a few games and then is reinstated to the team. But no, this is not how to handle these situations. It's fortunate that a situation like this hasn't come from one of the schools we cover. But no, I just don't know how he thought he could get away with this. And this is clearly crossing the line for a coach's perspective.
This is one of those instances of a coach in desperation mode to make sure that he has viable talent on the field so that he has a chance to win. Because I tell you what, Kyle Flood, I mean, he has to be pulling his hair out looking at what has happened to certain players in recent weeks who are players for Rutgers. Just look at this timeline. Look at the amount of names. Barnell, Nadir Barnell, is among six players dismissed from the team in recent weeks following a string of arrests. Cornerback Dre Boaks and fullback Lloyd Terry, they have been charged in home evasions. Barnell, cornerback Ruan Peel, safety DeLon Stevenson, and fullback Razone Gross were charged with assault. Rutgers indefinitely suspended all Big Ten wide receiver Leonte Corot earlier this week after Corot was charged with simple assault in a domestic violence incident that took place outside of High Point Solution Stadium following last Saturday's loss to Washington State. And it's being said that he actually like body slammed a female on the concrete. I'm sitting there saying to myself, what in the world is going on out in Rutgers? And clearly there's a discipline issue with its players. So at the end of the day, you know, Flood is feeling pressure. You know, I'm trying to dive myself into the mindset of how stupid, how he could go, you know, and be so stupid with this move when it comes to his professor. And I can sort of see where his mindset was going, because anytime you have that amount of players being involved with that amount of off-the-field incidences that forces your hand to the point where they can't play for a long time for the Rutgers football program, it's like, dude, I mean, gosh, I don't want this thing to escalate. Well, maybe, you know, this is an academic problem. Maybe I can talk to the professor and get away with this one. He's in desperation mode right now. But at the end of the day, you got to play by the rules. It starts with your players. Maybe you should have a sit down with them and a big chat about your players, and maybe bring in some psychologists or something to talk about why in the world this problem, off the field incidents are occurring within your program. It's crazy when I read about the amount of incidences in the recent weeks, Isaac.
Yeah, I had not heard all of that. Barnwell seems like quite the good guy now. So, no, for Kyle Flood, you know, I hate to be like this, but you think if he went after talent with that much off-the-field problems, you think they'd be better. Rutgers isn't that good of a team. You think they could find some decent kids
right,
who are decent football players as well. So, no, this definitely is a discipline issue, in my opinion. These are football players that probably there are signs that led up to these incidents as well that maybe Flood just let go unnoticed, just let go right under the bridge. So, no, I think this is just the next series of an incident, and I think the suspension's well-deserved. Maybe he has more coming to him eventually as well.
Yeah, and we'll see how this whole thing, you know, pans out. But again, Rutgers, they in the meantime, they have a big game tomorrow, a primetime game, 8 p.m. against Penn State. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how those players deal with all of this media attention and all of this controversy away from the football field. But yeah, I'm surprised you haven't heard about, you know, Rutgers wide receiver Leonte Corot, you know, body slamming a woman to the concrete outside of the team's headquarters. And, you know, it was reported that Corot, I mean, he was romantically involved with the woman, and he is accused of picking her up and slamming her down on a concrete surface, injuring her left hip, both palms, left elbow, and left side of the head. And, you know, this is a direct correlation to the conversation we've been having for months upon months about, you know, athletes and domestic violence, specifically football players in that conversation. And this just speaks directly to that.
Yeah, it's a direct corollary from it for sure, because at the end of the day, football, any real football analyst or expert would probably argue that the game itself isn't that bad. It's good for players, in fact. It teaches them the values of discipline, of, you know, self-work and things like that. But at the same time, the image that's being presented to the general public is that football players have a tough time distinguishing between off the field and on the field sometimes. And I think that comes down to the coach maybe not being strict enough sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, you always hear the excuse, well, they're men playing a gladiator game and they're taught to go and knock someone's head off on the football field. It's testosterone driven. When do you turn on that switch, and when do you got to learn how to turn it on the field, but, you know, make sure you turn it off when you leave, you know, the gridiron. And a lot of football players just don't know how to do that. All right, listen to our first break. When we come back, folks, we will be giving you a recap of last night's Current Sports TV sit down with D.A. Jones, head coach of the Kappa Express U football team and former football player for Northwood University. You don't want to miss that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Current Sports.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, each and every Wednesday afternoon, as of right now at 3 p.m., we tape Current Sports Television. That's right, right here at the WKAR-TV studios located on the campus of Michigan State University, inside of the Communication Arts and Sciences Building. Next week, Wednesday at 3 p.m., we had to make a bit of a change. Arthur Ray, I don't want to tell his entire story right now and you know, put it out the box before you guys, you know, get the surprise of what he has really gone through to get back to playing the game of football. But Arthur Ray was a former Michigan State football player who transferred to another university, but is a cancer survivor. That's all I want to say as far as telling his story right now, to give you guys a brief synopsis. He has an incredible story. He actually is, he resides right now in Chicago, Illinois. But Arthur, you know, he's supposed to be our guest for next week's show, but he hit me up today saying, Al, I can't make it. My schedule is kind of crazy right now. So we're going to have Arthur later on in a few weeks on the show. So I just got word not too long ago that Eric Doc Love of 92.1 The Team, he is a radio high school sports commentator. You can catch him during high school football each and every Friday night on the Team 92.1. They always have like a big game of the week. I've been filling in for Jesse Goldberg Strasser, the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. Of course, with the Lansing Lugnuts season being over now, Jesse now, of course, you know, I'm done pinch hitting for him now. He's going to come in now and be the head play-by-play guy. But Doc does an unbelievable job, along with Jesse as well, of breaking down the action of high school sports. He's unbelievable. So next week, Wednesday, we're going to have Eric Doc Love in to talk about the high school mid-Michigan football scene. And, you know, he'll give his thoughts on who he thinks has a legitimate shot of going pretty far in the state tournament and possibly winning a state championship. So if you want to be a part of that live studio audience, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. But in the meantime, last night we aired our latest edition of Current Sports Television with guest D.A. Jones, who is the youth football coach for the Kappa Express, and he has been, you know, doing one outstanding job with that team. That team was founded back in 1975. Jones is also a former college football player who balled out for Northwood University. He has an incredible story. So I started off our conversation by talking about his background when it comes to the world of football.
My football career actually started in Lansing, Michigan. With the Midas Mufflers. And so I played tackle football with Midas, and then I went on to play with a team called the Lansing Mercy Mad Dogs in my last year of youth football.
I love these names.
Mm-hmm. and I played for, you know, several teams, you know, in between, you know, and but that's where it ended in youth football. And I went on to play football at Sexton High School. Mm-hmm. And graduated in 1996. And from there, I went to Northwood University.
Right.
And played there from 96 to 2001. So.
He had a pretty good career. I know it got cut short because of a shoulder injury,
correct,
right?
Correct.
And, you know, now you are here in the community as a youth football coach for the Kappa Express. Now, for many, because, you know, looking at, you know, the overall sporting scene of coverage from around here at Mid-Michigan, rarely is youth football talked about. I mean, high school football, yeah, we cover that every Friday night. I mean, there's high school football shows left and right. They even have radio shows dedicated to it every Saturday morning.
Right.
It's covered heavily. But when talking about ages, you know, like 7 to 14 years old, I mean, you never really see coverage on what you guys do with the Kappa Express or the Lansing Area Titans. Talk about the Express, and when was it founded, and how long has the Express been right here in Mid-Michigan?
Okay, well, Kappa Express has been around for 40 years and was founded in 1975. So there was a team called the Blackhawks that existed before Kappa Express, and King Willard Walker was one of the coaches on that particular team, along with several other coaches that founded our program. And so when the Blackhawks decided to close up shop, Mr. Walker didn't want to see that happen. So he went to the body, which is, you know, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, and expressed an interest in having a football team. And so they agreed that, you know, that would also be another footprint in the community for us. And so that's where we started. So in 1975, and we've been here ever since, 40 years.
How did you end up as a coach for that team?
Several years ago, one of our former coaches, Khalil Wasson, who passed away. We talked about it on the radio station.
Right.
You know, our program was in need of some new life. And so Khalil approached me at the barbershop one day and said, you know,
That's how you do it at the barbershop, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, and he, at the time, he was coaching with the Eastside Spartans.
Okay.
And so he said, you know, Coach Walker, you know, they approached me and they said they need us to come over and revive this program. And so this was years ago. And so went over with him to do that, you know, and, you know, sadly, you know, he passed away. But I'm still here, and that's kind of where I got my start with Cap Express.
What is that passion that help today's youth? And doing it from, you know, an area that you can directly talk to them from in the game of football, you being a former player. I mean, where did your, I guess you can say, motivation to help out kids come from, D.A.?
You know, to be blatantly honest with you, my parents. You know, my mother and father, they're eight of us in my family, six boys, two girls. And six of us are biological, and I have two adopted brothers. Mm-hmm. And my mother and father were foster parents to many children, many, you know, I mean, anywhere from 50 to 100 kids came through our family,
wow,
you know, as a
many.
Kid.
Wow.
There were quite a few. I mean, I cannot count the number of children that came through our house as foster children that my mother and father took in and took care of for various, you know, points of time. And so, you know, at the tail end of it, my mother and father did adopt my two younger brothers. And just the love and passion that they have for children, for the youth as a whole, I think that that's something that kind of flows through the blood of my family. And so when I look at youth football and being able to give back to kids, I think it comes from my family, my parents.
And you can clearly see the passion of D.A. Jones whenever he's coaching a game. I actually got the chance to cover my very first Kappa Express football game not too long ago. Of course, it was a Hall of Fame game.
Right.
You guys took on the Lansing area Titans, in which you guys did win that match. And seeing you on the sidelines with the bucket hat, you know, you were pretty in tune with what you were doing, man, and trying to mentor the kids and very emotional out there, man. You can tell it bleeds through, man, when you're on those sidelines. Now, going back to that Hall of Fame game, the first ever of its kind, and you being one of the primary organizers of that game, talk about how the idea for that game came about.
Well, you know, it did come about, honestly, losing Khalil Wasson last year. We lost another coach, Brian, from the Lansing area Titans team,
right,
last year to a car accident. He was actually found in someone's front yard on a Sunday morning, and a drunk driver actually hit him and kept going. And someone from that family walked out and saw him on their front lawn early Sunday morning. And so just looking at the lives that we've lost, and then Charles Johnson, who passed away this year, you know, losing the lives of the coaches that have been such an impact or have had such an impact on kids in the community, losing these guys and these guys being forgotten about is what really ignited the idea to have that game so that we can start honoring these coaches.
Now, to talk about, of course, Charles Johnson, that's mm-hmm. who we profiled during that feature, which we aired here on Current Sports TV. Charles Johnson is a name that when I put out the story, I got mm-hmm. a lot of responses back from that episode show, mm-hmm. Via email, tweet, even text, from individuals who knew of Charles mm-hmm. and knew of his impact right here.
Right.
For those that don't, though, I mean, talk about why you guys decided to induct him as the very first coach into the Lansing Hall of Fame.
The lives, man. He has reached so many lives. You know, the Southside Panthers was one of the best teams in the Lansing area. And they don't exist today, but there are so many people that play for that team. And he impacted so many lives. And I thought, you know, there was no better person to choose than him, you know, for that award. And really, to be honest with you, it's just the many, many lives that he's impacted. And then his son, still to this day, is out coaching. You know, and how could you not pick someone like that? I mean, he has such an impact that his own son wanted to follow in his footsteps. And he coached with the Southside Panthers, and then now he's coaching with the Lansing Mustangs. But, you know, you can see, you know, the difference that he's made in the community. So I thought that it would be great to have him as the first one. Great to have his son being there to receive the award in his father's honor, just to kind of show that, you know, it's not about just one team in this city. You know, it's not about just one person in the community. It's about us all. So.
Gotta love it, man. And you guys are doing some incredible things. Now, you know, to talk about and summarize the landscape mm-hmm. of youth football from around here in Lansing and beyond, I mean, do you see it growing, D.A.? I mean, from when you first became, you know, a coach for the Kappa Express to right now in present day, I mean, do you see more and more kids starting to play with you guys and other leagues around the area, or no? Do you see the opposite?
Well, you know, for Kappa Express individually, we actually have more kids in our program this year than we've ever had. But from a league-wide perspective in the league that we play in, which is the Lansing Football League, and then looking at Tri-County, which is close by, which consists of, you know, the junior Quakers, the junior Comets, the junior Rams, and things of that nature. Mm. I don't know that those programs are growing, but I do know that as a whole, the landscape of youth football is not growing. I mean, the attrition. I mean, when you start to look at the concussions and you start to look at the injuries and things like that, far fewer kids are playing football as they age. So when you look at the 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds, you'll see a lot of those kids out there. But as they get to 11, 12, 13, 14, you start to see the dip. And that decline that you see in youth football, you can now see it in high school football. Mm-hmm. So we'll take Eastern, for instance, Eastern Quakers.
Right.
They don't have a freshman or a JV football team this year.
Nope.
Lansing Sexton does not have a JV football team this year. And then they actually moved freshmen up to play JV for a while. They moved them back down to play freshmen, and then I think back up to play JV. And then Everett in Lansing has freshman JV varsity. But then we look over at Waverly High School. They don't have a JV team this year. So when you start to see things like that, you see the declining numbers. Back when I played football, that didn't exist.
Everybody wanted to get out
there. Everybody played.
Right.
You know, and even at the youth level, I mean, there were 10, 11 teams here in Lansing, excluding the Tri-County teams.
Right.
You know, and so you don't see as many kids playing as you did. And that, I think that it is the injuries, but kids are playing different sports. But then we deal with different kids today. I mean, some kids don't have an interest in being active or playing sports. I mean, they have, you know, a lot more video games, and you got the television, and
yep.
And some parents just really don't motivate the kids to get out there and do it. So,
now this is a conversation that we've had and we've exhausted to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Concussions, mm-hmm. Right here on Current Sports. We've talked about it on radio. We've talked about it on TV. Mm-hmm. This is actually the first time, other than when we had Matthew Brown of the Cowboys, the Cowboys youth football team. This is the first time you and Matt, in which we, you know, can talk directly about the effect of concussions, mm-hmm. for our youth. Mm-hmm. How big has it hurt youth football when, you know, every single day we turn on the TV, it feels like, or every other week or every other month, and we hear and see new things and hear new names from former athletes who play football who are going through, you know, things like dementia and can't remember when they walk into a room why they walked into the room. Mm-hmm. How bad is that perception hurt and really turned adults away from allowing their little one to play?
I think it's pretty bad. You know, I can't quantify it because I don't know that there's a national study that has been done. But I do know that there are more parents, and I've had conversations with parents even to this day. You know, I was at the bank yesterday and talked to a mom who her son is 8, and they still won't allow him to play football just yet. I think that the kids that have gotten a start and they've started playing football, the parents don't shy away from it. They will continue to let the child play because the child loves to play or they want the child to play. I think it's the ones who are on the fence about it and that child has not started to play football yet. So they're reluctant to let him start. Mm-hmm. Or the daughter. There's some girls that play football as well.
Right.
So I think that the ones that have not gotten that start, we can't really quantify because they'll never play, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense.
They may turn away from football and play an entirely different sport. And so we see the attrition in youth football, but a lot of it might be from kids who never even played. And mm-hmm. so they didn't get an opportunity because of the stigma of concussions. So, but I think that kids that are currently playing, parents don't take them out of football because of something they've heard about concussions. You know, once you've gone through a season or gone through two seasons and you don't sustain those injuries, they're not afraid of it.
Right.
But it's the ones who haven't had their child involved in it. And so they hear that concussion thing. They hear the, you know.
And it scares them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. And then you look at the situation with Junior Seau, it was a sad situation. You know, and families thinking, you know, years down the road, I don't want that to happen to my child. So I think that, if anything, it would be a kid that has not played and the parent may not let their child play because of the concussion issue. So.
D.A., what is the Kappa Express doing to make the game safer?
Well, there are several things that we do, you know, to make the game safer. You know, first of all, you know, our coaches, all head coaches have to take a heads-up certification, which is heads-up tackling. There's a hawk tackling course that you can take now that teaches rugby style tackling. Mm-hmm.
And what is rugby style tackling for those who don't know?
Well, they teach you to run through the body and squeeze the legs. And so it's different. You know, you're tackling with your chest and not with your head.
Right. You're not affecting any of this here.
Right. Right. You know, and it's just a different style of tackling. You kind of like rolling with the athlete. So
okay.
It just teaches a safer style of tackling. You know, you're more so tackling with your body and not leading with your head. Mm-hmm. And so there's different steps that you have to take in terms of doing the hawk style tackling. But it's just different. You know, years ago, you know, tackling, it didn't matter how you ran in and hit someone, you just did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even with blocking, you blocked with your face mask back in the day.
Right.
You know,
oh, my gosh.
You know,
it's craziness, right?
Right. You know, you run in, hit them head first, and you,
yeah.
You know, you block. But we do that. We limit the amount of contact that our children have in practice. You know, we know when we play on game day, there's going to be a lot of contact, so we limit the amount of contact that those kids have in practice. When they do tackle the wrong way, we make sure we stop them in practice.
Mm-hmm.
We'll chastise them a little bit because they can not only hurt themselves, they can hurt the next player.
Yeah,
and
certainly.
So we just try to, you know, keep, you know, our wits about it, address the issue when it comes up, and just make sure we teach the kids the right way.
For you as a former player, when you heard about all this stuff coming about former athletes going through a lot after they, you know, played the game, did you kind of look back at your career and say, okay, what happened here? Did I have a concussion? Do I need to go get checked out here? Did you get a bit nervous at all, D.A.?
No, it scared me. You know, it scared me. You know, growing up, I never had headaches, you know. In football, in my career, there I can probably admit to maybe at least one concussion-type symptom.
And when did that happen?
When I was in high school.
In high school.
You know, there was a guy, and I'm going to mention his name. His name was Ben. I played with him at Northwood as well, Ben.
You're calling Ben out right now.
He played for Waverly.
Okay.
But he hit me harder than anyone in high school football. And when I got to college, it was a guy named Elzy Honeycutt. They used to call him Alabama.
I can only imagine.
And I remember my freshman year, we had our scrimmage, and he hit me and said, "Welcome to college football."
Wow.
Those two guys hit me harder than anyone that ever hit me, you know. And I got up and walked back to the huddle. But if I had any type of concussion symptom, it would have been from one of those hits. And you kind of see the bright light, you know.
Did that happen to you? Did you when they hit you? I mean, did
oh,
you?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You kind of got just dazed and confused for a bit. What was the protocol?
I wasn't dazed and confused. I just the bright light. I mean, you just okay. Kinda, they hit you, you know, and it's like you can kind of the lights come on, sort of thing, you
right.
know. And at the time, there wasn't a concussion protocol like it is today. If anything, you'd have the smelling salts.
Right,
you know,
right.
They just take the salts, you know, and
they'll wake you up and you go
oh,
back
yeah.
out there.
That's about it, you know, because concussions weren't really a big deal back then.
Right.
You took some hard hits, they say you got a stinger or you got dinged up and you go to the sideline, and if you can tell me what day it is today, you get back in the game.
My yeah. oh my, have things changed, right?
To say the least, right, folks? Oh boy, great chat with D.A. Jones, head coach of the Kappa Express youth football team. Really appreciate D.A. taking the time out of his Wednesday afternoon to join me on the show this week. Again, if you missed that episode, you can catch it by simply going to video.wkar.org and watching that episode or any episode in current sports TV history. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this edition of WKAR's Current Sports, and we'll put a bow on the sporting week as well, folks, by talking about the MSU Air Force game, Lions and Vikings, and breaking you off with Reflection Friday. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Only about 10 minutes left. If you still want to call in and give a brief thought on anything that's on your mind, 517-355-9527. I'm going to give some quick thoughts on the Michigan State and Air Force game, which will take place tomorrow afternoon at Spartan Stadium, the second of a four-game homestand for the Spartans after, of course, the season opener took place in Kalamazoo, Michigan against WMU. You know, for me, Isaac, when looking at this matchup, I tell you what, how Michigan State and their defense competes against that triple option is going to be the main storyline of that game, I really do believe. Because if you look at, you know, the different, you know, areas that they can hit you with, I really think that they have plenty of running backs for MSU to worry about and to put a target on. DJ Johnson, Jacoby Owens, they combined for 188 yards on 32 carries last week. And as a team, the Falcons are right now averaging 6.2 yards per carry. Now, granted, they have not competed against a formidable defense like MSU's, and I really think MSU is going to slow them down, but there can't be holes, glaring holes, for that Michigan State defense going against a triple option offense. Also, Look out for Garrett Brown, wide receiver of the Falcons. He has more rushes than receptions this season and ran for a 63-yard TD last week. Now, on the other hand, look for Madre London, who had 103 yards on 18 carries against Oregon, to really have a great game. L.J. Scott, who seems to be a star as well in that Michigan State backfield. Connor Cook, he threw for 192 yards and two TDs against Oregon. I really think he's going to come into this game and really be able to do some things as well. And Aaron Burbridge, who I thought was a breakout star for Michigan State against Oregon as well, he had eight passes, and also McGarrett Kings. He was also a big factor in last week's game as well. So I really think Michigan State is going to be able to put points up on the board without a doubt, but that defense is going to be the main thing I'll be taking a look at, and also whether or not Michigan State can finally get their special teams together. Are you kidding me? Again, of course, when special teams, they allowed a kickoff return for a touchdown in their opener against Western Michigan and a punt return TD against Oregon. That can't happen.
I agree. So the other thing I'd look out for is Carson Roberts, the new starter for Air Force in wake of Nate Romine's injury. I'm interested to see how he plays because I think in some ways this is a good thing for Air Force. And you never want to say, you know, you never want to give credit or thank an injury for happening, but Carson Roberts gives MSU a different look that they haven't researched, but he's also a player that's been integrated into the system. He's a senior. He's played in 10 games as a sophomore, so I'd expect a decent game from him. However, I just don't think Air Force can stick with MSU, so I think Madre London, I think LJ Scott, and I think also, Aaron Burbridge will all have big games for MSU, and I think they'll finally solve that special teams problem. No way, three games in a row.
Right. I'm going 37-21 Spartans. Who do you got?
I've got 45-10 Spartans.
There you go. All right. Let's go here. Let's go to the Lions. Lions and Vikings. I also want to give brief thoughts on that matchup. Of course, the Lions trying to shake off that collapse in the second half against the San Diego Chargers. Looking at what the Lions have to shore up. Again, they have to shore up leaks in that pass defense. Phillip Rivers racking up a 404 yards passing against Detroit's defense. That can't happen. Detroit also avoiding that 0-2 start. I talked about that stat yesterday, Isaac, of how teams historically, when looking at, you know, playoff-bound teams in the NFL, those who have started off the year 0-2 have less than a 10% chance of making the postseason. Now, again, it's just stats. You know, you can't put too much into that. But again, you know, the proof is in the pudding for that. Minnesota's dominance is something to also look at. You know, the Lions are actually amid their best 9-game stretch ever against the Vikings, going 6-3 in that span. They beat Minnesota up at their place last year and swept the season series. In fact, Detroit was so good overall against the NFC North, going 5-1. So we'll see if they can dominate Minnesota. I don't think that'll happen, though. But I mean, Minnesota's a very good team this year. You got Adrian Peterson back. Also, Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson has to get going in this game, and he can't be targeted for, you know, less than eight times throughout this game. I still think I'm going with the Lions in this game, even though the Vikings still look to be a very, very good team this year. And I think Adrian Peterson is going to have a much better game than he did last week. I'm going with the Detroit Lions to win this one, though, Isaac. If I had to put a score on it, I'll say, 24-17.
That's very close to my score. I pick the Lions 21-17. At the end of the day, I just don't think that Minnesota has the firepower to get them over the hill. And although Detroit's defense was subject to intense pressure and intense scrutiny after last week's game, I don't think Minnesota has the weapons to exploit them like the Chargers did. And I think Detroit's offense just has too many potent weapons for Minnesota to totally shut down. So I don't think it will be high scoring. I think Lions get a bye with 21 points.
Okay. All right. Well, it's time for Reflection Friday now, when we take a look at the week that was here on Current Sports and beyond it, and bring to you our favorite moments. Now, Isaac, for me, I first off have to bring up Jason Pierre-Paul, who, of course, is trying to make his comeback to the NFL. And I tell you what, I don't know if you saw the picture of that fireworks, the aftermath of that fireworks accident, which has now left him without an index finger on, I believe, his right hand. But I don't encourage anyone to Google that one because I didn't know what I was walking myself into. But I really hope, you know, I really want to bring up this because I thought Jason Pierre-Paul's his response was fantastic. He went on to say, I don't think my index finger had any sacks throughout my entire career. So I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, I'm curious to see him come back.
I am too. I think he'll be just fine at the end of the day. Although, I mean, it seems like having a finger would be important. Maybe that's just to me. But
right.
At the end of the day, yeah, I think he'll be just fine. My reflection is actually on James Harden. We never really got around talking to him. But no, if you sign a $200 million contract with Adidas, you don't wear Jordans because that's affiliated with Nike, the main competition for Adidas. That's ridiculous. And also, no, Reebok Kamikazes are definitely cool, Al.
They are cool. Not saying that. I'm just saying they're no Michael Jordan shoes. That's all I'm saying. Jordan shoes are the creme de la creme tennis shoe of all time.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that reflection there. Also, Floyd pay-per-view's numbers really were just a complete flop looking at his final fight against Andre Berto, and Berto is not happy about it and is blaming Floyd Mayweather for the low numbers. So he's not happy about his paycheck at the end of the day. Also, Baby Mac, who we had on right before, you know, the big game, Michigan State and Oregon, College Game Day being in the house. Baby Mac is a hip-hop artist. She's a former women's basketball player for the Tennessee Volunteers under legendary coach Pat Summitt. We had her on the show because she's blowing up right now, and she's the official DJ of ESPN's College Game Day. And she actually used our interview for her hype video recapping her time here in East Lansing. So really appreciate that, Baby Mac, and we'll have her on, I'm certain, down the line. Also, my little sister's birthday was yesterday. She turned the big 11. How about that? So happy birthday to my little sister. I forgot to shout that out in the air. I called her at midnight yesterday, but I told her I was going to give her a shout-out. Totally forgot. So there's your shout-out, little Lori, okay? I love you. Big bro loves you. Also, RIP to one of the greatest basketball players of all time who sadly passed away on Sunday, the chairman of the boards. Rest in peace to Moses Malone. I can't believe we didn't even bring that up on Monday either, Isaac.
Yeah, I definitely want to give him a shout-out as well. The other thing I've got to go to is Julio Franco, still playing baseball at age 57. I remember back 8 years ago playing a baseball video game that he was 49 in. He was a DH for the Atlanta Braves and being like, now what game producer put themselves in the game?
Right.
Because 49 years old, but he's still playing at 57 in Japan. Great story there. So, yeah, that's my shout-out, Julio Franco.
Very cool stuff. And also a very entertaining slate when it comes to the world of Mid-Michigan High School football. If you want to come say hello to myself along with my intern, Bree Harvey, we will be at the Portland at Lansing Catholic High School football game. Again, kickoff is at 7 p.m. for that one. A battle in the CAAC White. That should be very intriguing. My first time I get to see Tony Poljan do his thing on the gridiron. He is unbelievable. Well, we unfortunately are out of time, and we have to say goodbye until Monday, ladies and gents. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to another fantastic week right here of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, have a great weekend, and be easy, people.